Welcome back to the Journey Podcast. I'm your co-host, Emma Jackson.
And I'm Jose.
And we are joined by the incredible, the amazing, the outstanding Vanessa and Holland from Ask Your Work Wife, Houston's coolest, amazingest podcast, making some serious waves. Ask Your Work Wife is your guide to making corporate America work for you. And we want to dive into so much about that, but in particular, you have 3 years of episodes on how women, so but many. Also people in general, can make the most out of corporate America. So we really want to talk about finding a mentor in the workplace today. But before we get into that, how the heck did you guys get into Ask Your Work Wife? Where did that come about? Great name.
Thank you.
And what was your background? Were you aspiring podcast stars?
The answer is it's a lot bigger than that.
Yes.
We're aspiring...
media moguls?
I think we... are aspiring, could you say that?
Period. Yeah, just...
And we put the, I think, ambitious in what we're trying to accomplish, and we want to draw women like us to us, because I think everyone deserves to get more out of corporate America, but the ambitious ones are the ones that are going to get it.
That's true.
Amen. Well, and it started really, like, in that space. It's just, like, we don't have any media out there for people like us, who are women, who are working, who want more out of their life, who maybe, like, both of us grew up in a fairly conservative Christian household where you're not really taught that ambition is an okay thing for a woman to have. So when we look around the media landscape right now, we're just like, there's not really anything designed for us. There's the, like, you can have a career, but you can't also be a wife, a mother, a woman, but you can be the opposite of that. You can only be a woman, only be a wife, only be a mother. We're like, no, you can have it all. It just requires you to, like, level the fuck up. So
no,
let's do
I
it.
I love that. I love it. We are all leveling the fuck up this year. No, but we did, it was the same thing for us. The reason we started the podcast, I would say we also fall into the category of aspiring in general, which is great. I'm going to use that. Is that we didn't feel like there was content out there. So I desperately looked for resources when I took over the Idea Farm. I was 22. I had no idea what I was doing. Literally no formal business education whatsoever. And every time I would listen to these podcasts, it would be people who the situations were vastly different. They got, you know, millions of dollars of VC funding. Their problems and my problems were not the same, you know? Right. And the pathway towards even how to do that, everyone just glazes over it. Oh, I had some challenges. It was tough, but now look at me now. I'm all successful. And it was like, okay, but like, how do I apply that to right now?
Yes.
You know?
I think that's really interesting. What we've found is, and I wonder if you found this with the podcast as well, is like, it's not that hard.
This is Holland's motto. She's like, it's like it's hard. That's like every time she does something, she's like, like, it's hard. I'm like, it's not actually.
Because, and I think the unlock there is that there are steps. Mm-hmm. It's not a mysterious thing. Corporate America isn't a mysterious thing. Podcasting is not a mysterious thing. Getting what you want isn't that mysterious.
But you have to know. Sorry.
There are steps.
We're going to do this at the same time, a couple times.
Yeah, I would say the information is kind of like walking key sometimes. It's not easily accessible.
Sure.
There's a club. There's a code. There's there's something unknown that maybe women aren't taught. That what is the way to get in? What are the words I have to use? What do I expect? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And this is why one of the core beliefs of our podcast is we don't want to gatekeep any information. We want every single episode to be 100% actionable the moment you hear it.
That's exactly what we do.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think this is why we resonated so much. We're like, are we doing the same thing?
Different audiences, same thing. I love that, because that's like, at the end of the day, otherwise it's just all talk. And
totally.
You're just like, that's cool. That made me feel better, I guess. Is that inspiring me? Cool. But is that going to help me solve the challenge that I'm facing
right now.
My life?
Yeah, exactly. So we chose that question and answer format. We chose 20 minutes because we don't believe your commute should be longer than 20 minutes if you have one at all. It might take you 20 minutes to get from your bed to the kitchen and back to your office, you know, like that's kind of the vibe, right? But then, like, you should be able to say, like, oh, what the work wives, what Holland and Vanessa said today, that's a problem I'm facing today, right now, and I can implement these three things, these steps. She loves a checklist, like, today, and like make a difference in my life and make more money, frankly. That's what we're all about.
Freaking love that.
Yeah.
So, okay, taking all of that and going into the workplace, imagine that you are either totally new to corporate America or you're just starting out in, you know, you just graduated. Mm-hmm. I had a horrible time, and I was in more of like, it was like corporate nonprofit, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really felt like I didn't realize I was stepping in mud, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it was, until I got reactions from my peers, you know, in my office being like, oh, Or ooh, or you shouldn't have. Or like people would. It's like there were. If I felt like there were, it was a landmine situation of all of these unsaid things, and I said, why can't people just tell me what I'm allowed to say? What is like the proper? And it was so frustrating to me. And so what? I mean, with that in mind, how do you go about, if you are feeling like that, how do you go about finding a mentor to help you navigate that workspace?
That's a solid question.
Well, I think you've skipped a step there, which is realizing that a mentor could be beneficial to
you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Ooh.
So I think it's worth calling out.
Yeah, you're not alone. Yeah. That's the number one thing. It feels like you're, especially when you're getting true. Is like the wide eyes and the tippy tappy, like, oh, there's a slide set going on and I'm not involved in it.
Right.
That's the worst feeling to have in any meeting. So.
And you feel like you're the only person. You're like, obviously everyone else knows something I don't. And my tendency is not everyone's, but it's like, oh, there must be something wrong with me.
Sure.
And I'll tell you, women and people of color feel this more than anyone else in corporate America. Like, they just do. Because they didn't grow up with a dad who was an MBA. They didn't grow up with, you know, like, hey, son, you're going to take over the family business. Da-da-da-da-da, right? Like, they just didn't grow up that way. I happen to. Both my parents, mother and father, were in corporate America. And my mom was, like, the first person in her high school to wear pants to school. Because girls still had to wear skirts to school. God. And she was like, I'm absolutely done with that. That's dumb. So she, like, that was just the pathway that was given to us. Like, women can do anything that men can do. My dad, I think he thought he had two sons with my sister and I. So we, like, hunt and fish and shoot and change our own tires and clean our own oil and, like, do all the things that you could ever want a son to do. And so it also became so what are you going to do to make some money? Because you have expensive taste. Which is also, like, a common thing with Holland and I. But you're right. So, like, I grew up in this weird place where, like, I'm both a woman and I understand corporate America, or I've grown up with it in the water. So from the time I was a little kid, my parents were having postmortems and after my, like, kindergarten homework assignments. Aww. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh my gosh.
Like, there's a whole language out there that you don't understand, and it can feel very isolating.
Let me ask you this question.
Sure.
How do you identify that mentor?
There's a set of parameters under which a mentor is most useful to you.
Mm-hmm, sure.
If that mentor is too close to you, is responsible for your growth, you know, in the org in a directional way, that's a problem because they're not neutral enough to advise you.
Yeah, they need to be outside your vertical. So they can't be your reporting manager. They can't be in charge of hiring, firing you. They can't be in charge. They can't even be like your VP over your manager. Because then, like, if you're going to bitch about your manager, then it becomes like a problem for your manager. You're like, ugh, right? That can be a strategy, but we'll talk about it later. So it's got to be someone who's kind of like adjacent to your vertical, but knows what's going on. They're close enough to see your work. And, like, as you come to them for advice, they have a better scope of the situation and can say, okay, I saw you in this meeting and you handled it this way. A better way would have been XYZ, right?
All right.
Interesting. I think sometimes the easier answer is, okay, my manager or my direct supervisor or even a couple of steps up, because especially if you like your position, you like where you're going and you want to get to that person. You know?
Those people, if they're not your manager, could be your champion.
Sure.
If they are able to speak to your wins in a way that advocates for you in rooms that you're not in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a better space. And I think indicating the difference between manager, mentor, champion is really useful for that reason, because they are not the same.
Okay, then bring it down for us. Yeah. I'm so serious. No gatekeeping,
right? Do you remember the episode off the top of your head?
Nope.
This is always a problem in our podcast. I'm like, in episode, I always want to reference our other episodes.
Then what we'll do is we'll link it in the description.
Like, don't make me look it up. I'm like, sorry. So yes, we'll have it for you. But we've done episodes on this because really, truly having a mentor, a champion, and a manager within your organization and making sure you're having the right meetings with those people is 100% the way to go. If I could just do one thing for the rest of the next 160 episodes, it would be talk on those three things.
Oh. But the reality is, when I was in corporate America, I technically am still in corporate America, but I never had those. Like, those never available. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what a champion was. Mm-hmm. I honestly didn't know one, so you just said right now.
Well, I think it's like, it doesn't exist unless you name it almost.
Yeah.
Or it existed, but it's not actionable until you have a word. And I wouldn't say that you're going to someone and saying, unlike going to a mentor, a prospect.
Could you be my champion?
Can you be my champion? Yeah. And that's not what it is. So
how do you even have that conversation?
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
You're like, okay, so say you finally, you understand the steps, you watch the podcast, and you're like, okay, they're not my direct manager. There's someone else that's generally involved, sees enough of my work to maybe.
Yep.
Yeah. How does that conversation go? Is it an email?
I think Holland is the best example of this. So she is new to corporate America and she just came to it from managing a yoga studio. So, like, just, you know, maybe enough hard skills to get her the job, but no soft skills to speak of. Well, plenty of soft skills. Rude. But like not in a way that like, oh, I know what a status in 101 is. Right. But Holland's soft skills, she does have it. She's very personable and she has no fear when it comes to talking to people. So she just started putting everyone on her calendar and a coffee chat. Mm-hmm. Just like, hey, here's 15 minutes. I want to understand you and your role in the company and how my role relates to yours.
I guess what I'm actually, on the same note, mm-hmm. what's your motivation for that in the corporation? Like, are you trying to scale the corporation for financial reasons or just a title reason? Like,
did you say money? Yes.
Okay, that's it. Yeah. For me, every single, I looked at it as a game, like a chess game, right?
Yeah.
Every promotion, I gained more money, then I had like a little bit more power and more freedom to do what I wanted to do. So like, I got 3 or 4 promotions in a span of like a year and a half. And that was just kind of like, I went to my direct supervisor. I was like, what are you doing? Let me do your job for you. And then I started doing his job. And then it got me a promotion and it kept growing that way.
Yes. So 2 things I want to call out there, like incredible Ask Your Work Wife principles. 1, know what you want, which is really the backbone for every move that you make, every choice, every coffee chat, every informational interview, every resume, every whatever is should be a direct outcome of getting what you want, getting after what you want. So congratulations for knowing what you want. And that's a really big deal.
Sure.
Yeah.
Really big deal. I think, okay, the people in this room could easily raise your hand and say, yes, I know exactly what I want.
Yes, but I didn't.
But for most people, they don't.
I will 100% completely present. Okay, when I first started my first job out of college, I had no idea what I want. And then I knew I was not happy. But I didn't. Right. I didn't even. Right. It was like, what was that questioning behind what do I want? Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
And I think the second part of this is like knowing what you want and then understanding that like, oh, the person above me is what I want. Like, I want their job. So I need to stretch into that. It's not my job right now.
You need to relieve them of their job.
Yeah, exactly. But in like a good way. Everyone can move up. Yeah.
They know what they want to.
Do you want to be VP? Great. I'm going to convince you to be VP so I can be director. Great. That's how I roll. I'm like, let's just keep rolling. So like, I love what you did there, which is like understand like, okay, if I don't understand the organization wide, I can understand it tall, which means I want more money. The person above me makes more money. I need to understand how to do their job so that they can maybe move up or out, right? Holland's like particular skills operations. And so for her, it's like a sick pleasure to understand exactly how a thing works all the way.
Right.
Like, and I'm the same way.
The reason is I know I can do my job better when I understand broad and deep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think this is why we're friends. Because if I'm going to know something, I need to know all the way down. So I tend to be, I call myself an expert in lots of fields because I'm just like, I need to know the whole thing. So for her, it became okay, if we're going to operationalize something, if we're going to make a system to make this my job easier so I can make more money doing someone else's job, I need to backfill. So like my favorite story is you training people,
you
took on training or something.
Right. So I came in, first job in corporate America, junior graphic designer, which is the shittiest job in the world.
It got you in.
Right, right. Your designs are not even expected to be pretty. Like the bar is so low. It's so low. But what I found was I was doing a lot of repetitive tasks for this particular vertical. And I was like, there has to be a better way. I know there's a better way. And I'm going to do the better way because I can. And I did without being asked. My title didn't change. My job description didn't change. Nothing about my compensation changed. But I started just making it better operationally. And that led to, like, doing that job led me to having that job and then growing in that job and then becoming closer to the product and the P&L and so forth. Like, there's this we call it the elasticity clause, which I do know is episode 18.
Yes.
I hope that's right.
That's impressive. We cannot name our episode numbers like that yet.
But we've got our favorites, our particular favorites. But episode 18 about the elasticity clause is saying there is a push and a pull in growth in corporate America. And at some point, on some level, you have to do the job you want in order to get it.
Right.
But, mm-hmm. right?
Don't be offering a 2-for-1 sale to your employer.
Don't believe in 2-for-1 sales.
What do you mean by that, 2-for-1 sales?
Don't be doing 2-person's job for 1-person's salary. So like, so don't show off that you can do that without first having a conversation like, hey, I would like to do this. I'm going to label this a stretch project. And your manager might not know that terminology. So you just have to say like, I'm going to try to like do this part of your job so that I can help you out more, right? Mm. And they should pick up the signal that you want their job, but you shouldn't be doing all of their jobs so they can be in Cabo. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, my strategy was like 3 months before my review, I started doing all their tasks, all their jobs. So
I like the timing. Yeah, very good. Recency bias for you.
Yeah, so right when my review came, I tried to maximize my raise, I tried to maximize my promotion. Then the way I always, in the Army taught me this, it's like when you go to those review boards or the promotion reviews, whatever, I'm bringing to you a document that had all my duties and responsibilities.
Yes. As opposed to asking, like, hey, I want that, and I should just be given it, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. do the responsibilities that follow, yeah. which I do feel like does happen in the workplace.
It can.
And so it's like that very fine line you have to fall where you're right. It's not a 2-for-1 sale, yeah. but you're also showing I'm going to do this without you asking me to totally. Do it to show what I can
yeah.
do.
Yeah. Have you guys ever gone to those like review meetings and then you were asking, like, I remember one time I asked for a raise, and then it was a fair raise, right? Mm-hmm. And they were like, no, I don't think the position is worth that. I'm like, cool, say less. I brought in two other documents of other competitors from Indeed.
I'm just going to share my screen.
Yeah, yeah. Take over.
And then, yeah. I mean, I had to make the hard choice of jumping companies at that moment in time because, to get the value. But
because you knew your market value mm-hmm. for your vertical, your role, your job description, et cetera.
Yeah. I love it.
Stan?
Yeah, and, like, I think the only thing in, like, getting more champions in your situation would be to just go wide. So, like, you knew how to manage a vertical, which from the Army, you absolutely not have to know how to deal with the chain of command, right?
Correct.
But, like, you also should pay attention to people who else is in the room with your VP. Like, if your VP's in a room with the CMO, who else is over there? There's 5 or 6 other VPs who are adjacent enough to you and your work to know that you're doing a great job. To
and
know
so
that directors
rather than having to advocate for yourself, yeah. they can advocate
right.
for you.
Right. Like,
which goes off
they
well.
All know that your director's a piece of shit. They know that you're the one keeping the department together, right? So when the VP is in a room with the CMO and the CMO asks, like, wow, this is a great report. Who did it? That champion can say, actually, it wasn't the director. It was you, right? Mm-hmm.
I definitely, a lot of my work was credited to my superiors.
Yeah, see?
That's unacceptable.
Why it's useful to know the organization wide and tall. Because yeah. then you've got people from the side who can do that verification for you in a room that you're never going to get in.
Facts. I wish I knew that back in the day.
Well, you know.
Living
now
life.
You know. Ask your work wife exists for yeah. the reasons.
Yeah.
And so then once you know your North Star, you're like, this is where I want to go. I want to get this promotion. I want to, whatever it is. And you have identified some potential people and your method, go right. wide, love that.
Right.
You're setting up 15-minute meetings. Mm-hmm. You're just kind of getting to know people so they know you.
Yep.
Say that there's someone you're like, oh, I think they would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you pivot that into and secure a mentor?
I don't think it's hard for us. I'm like, you just do it. Like, you just like, hey.
Well, I guess the question really is, what does that look like? What are you trying to hit?
Sure.
No, it's like, you can have a good connection with someone.
No,
and
but
I feel
it
like,
can feel difficult. And I will admit that the first mentor I asked to be my mentor, I was
it
crying
was stressful.
Beforehand and during.
And also there are people that don't, you know, that may really want to help you, but may not know
right.
how to help you.
So, sure. so part of the goal of those little conversations that you're having, those 15-minute coffee chats, getting to know the org wide and
tall or deep,
tall,
whatever, like
all
on.
Up, down, and
horizontal
yeah,
and vertical.
There we go. That's
XYZ.
It's a vibe check. It's a personality check, and you're checking in. Okay, do I get along with this person?
Mm-hmm.
Can I hear what they have to say? Are we communicating well? And do they even want to mentor?
Right.
Yeah.
You
and,
know what I'm saying? Not everyone does.
And do they know the organization well enough to do that? Because mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. I've had the unfortunate situation where I was watching somebody ask someone else to be a mentor, and I knew from my mentor that VP was like on their way out and like wasn't jiving with the corporate organization,
mm-hmm.
like just the culture, the attitude, the whatever. So it just became like a he was getting advice and there was a mentorship thing happening and they were getting coffee every morning and da 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 da, but it actually wasn't helping this man's career
mm-hmm.
because that VP was not in, you know, the rooms he needed to be in order to keep his own job. So like it is a little bit of a between the two of you vibe mm-hmm. check, but also like Is like this person a favorite of the upper echelons, right?
And you can watch like how their direct reports are being handled. Mm-hmm. Are they growing?
Yes.
Are they doing good work?
Yes.
So that's a that
are they being transferred
check.
Out from underneath them? Like,
right.
yeah.
Do you guys have a I don't want to say KPIs, but like little check markers that you go by. Like this person needs to have this. They need to grow this fast in the organization.
Actually, no.
It's not that detailed.
Not that detailed.
Yeah,
but I think also. I don't know what the way you put that reminded me of a huge problem that we see with how people think about their growth and what they want is they start to put time markers on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we find that to be really prohibiting.
Prohibitive? Yeah. Oh yeah.
I feel like that's how I kind of operate
So we do not like you'll love this and I've heard it from both of them. So I'm actually kind of excited
Perfect.
To tell them about it.
she's going to tell you about you
because
now.
She's watched every single episode. Biggest fan. I love it.
No, in this conversation.
Okay.
Oh,
so we, after answering all of these questions that we've been answering from our women around the world is around corporate America. Some of them are in New Zealand. So, you know, there's one who we love. We've developed a framework for thinking about your career. We call it the Three Moves Framework. And what it does, the first thing, it removes the timeline. So, like, every person that you've ever talked to always asks, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? What's the 15-year plan? What's the whatever, right?
And it's useful to a point.
Sure.
So don't get us wrong.
I have a spreadsheet called the 5-year plan. And mostly it's just like it's a 3-year roadmap is what it is. But okay. But what it does, when you set that timeline on yourself, you set yourself up to fail. Because life will just happen. So if you want to say, oh, I want to be director by the time I'm 25, and you get in a car accident and lose your leg, you're never going to be director by 25. You might make it by 30, but you had to take 2 years to do all kinds of, like, rehab and get yourself back in the saddle, like, all kinds of stuff. So, like, don't set yourself up to fail by putting a timeline on it. There's also the flip side of that is, like, okay, being director by 25 doesn't allow you the time to grow and really understand, like, what does it take to be a good manager in 3 or 4 different scenarios? What does it take to really master my job? What does it take to be able to do my job in any scenario, upside down, backwards, ifs, ands, or buts about, like, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Maybe you could be a director, but not a good director.
Right, exactly. I see so many people who are, and age is just a number until you mention 9/11, okay? But, like, I see so many people who are 10.
Because it happened a long time ago.
No, like, where were you in 9/11?
I was in fourth grade.
Yeah, I was a freshman in high school. Right. Age is just a number until you're like, hang on, what?
Like, I was in kindergarten.
Do you know what I mean? Exactly. Yeah, like, oh, no. Exactly. Am I old? Am I the old one in this room? Probably.
So the way she said it was a long time ago, I was like, oh, there you go.
It was ancient history for some of us, okay?
At least I lived through it. Yeah, she's alive. There are people that are literally in the workforce today that were not alive.
Yeah, yes, sure. Yes. So age is just a number until that moment where you're like, oh, I see people who are 10 years younger than me who are already VPs, and I go look at their LinkedIn and I'm like, you don't have enough experience for me to trust that you know how to run a P&L, you know how to effectively lead and grow directors, mm-hmm. whose responsibility is to lead and grow managers of people and projects. Do you know what I mean? Like,
he's got a checklist now.
So it's one of those, like, when you remove the timeline, though, then you ask yourself, okay, what else do I measure success by? So we've broken this down into 3 big steps. And the first one is foundational. Do I have all the foundational things running? Do I have my statuses and one-on-ones? Do I know who my mentors and managers and champions are? This is my favorite. ABI, always be interviewing. Holland has a rule, the 70-10-10-10 rule.
70-10-10-10, say it faster.
sorry. I'm always missing a 10 or I have a fourth 10. Then that math doesn't matter. But it's like 70% of your job is doing your job.
But only 70% of your job, not 100% of your job, is doing your job, because the other 30% is broken down into writing down what you did, mm-hmm. telling other people what you did. Those are the 10 mm-hmm. and 10. And the last 10% is
looking for a job,
getting a different job than the one that you
always have an exit strategy. These are the foundational things you need to be doing all the time, so that when you enter step 2, which is the rat race, which is what you're talking about, how do I
iterate and make sure that I can achieve move 3 mastery,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and that mastery
in
is
any
like
circumstance,
can I do this job hanging upside down by my toes over the pits
of
hell, like direction,
vision,
intention,
excellence, mastery.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of crazy. You guys have a really cool perspective that I have never
thought about.
I am
learning so much.
Because it's like my life, I do measure it by time and like 6 months intervals. Like Emma knows this about me. Every 6 months I'm trying to like innovate or I have to be at a milestone.
Well, and I think corporate America requires that. And I don't want to undermine that. We operate in quarters. I've got all sorts of KPIs for Q2.
Yeah, we
and
just
Q1.
Listen, this year though.
I'm saying like for me it's like more personal. Like I feel like my job isn't a job, it's like a lifestyle to a certain degree. Mm. And then every 6 months I need to be at a monetary like cap. Like this is the goal. And if I'm not here, okay, what do I need to learn? Mm. How do I need to pivot? Who do I need to hire to keep growing and that's in the rate that I want to grow?
Sure. What I appreciate is like the KPIs are not a pass fail. It's not if I don't make this by 6 months that I've failed, because that's the language we hear from women a lot. And just like people are new to corporate America, like, oh, if I don't make director by 25, we're just going to keep using this example, then I am unworthy and I've failed at life and blah, blah, blah. Like, no, you haven't. You just need some more time to do whatever. Or like, guess what? Your company went under. So like that has nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. So welcome. Mm-hmm. But you can still make director at 25, but just don't make that the pass-fail marker. Right?
I will say something that I have admired greatly about Jose, and I've been working to learn over the past couple of years of working with him, is that he does not take failure personally. I love he's just that. Like, this so is yes. data. We're going to pivot. We're yes, gonna, exactly. And there is no, like, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. There's it's no. because, and, you know, and it's the commitment to, oh, we're going to be successful.
This is fun about me.
Yeah.
So there's an abundant mindset there, that's great. Right? Huge. And a lack of identification mm-hmm. in the like, Buddhist mm-hmm. sense of, like, I am not my job. Mm-hmm. I am not this success marker.
I'm the opposite. And I've been working my way to unwind yes. that. Yes. I mean, literally, I am. I put so much passion and care into it. And I'm in a much healthier place.
Sure.
But, oh, boy, it was like, wait, you don't like this? I am terrible. Right, no. Right. We just want to change, you know, the email. Mm-hmm. Take a step back, just, you know?
I am the
just
email.
The subject line. Yeah.
But yeah. I think it's hard. Maybe it's a – I haven't looked at – you know, we've had honest conversations about it because – It does affect your working relationships. Mm-hmm. It affects you. And I'm like, I don't know. Is it a woman thing? Is it just like, cause I have a very strong sense of self in a lot of other ways,
right.
But for some reason, and part of me thinks it's because I am really ambitious and I took an unconventional path mm-hmm. and I feel greatly that I have a biological clock that is ticking. Because I know I want to have kids. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, it's uh-huh. so frustrating that the apex of a woman's theoretic, like, it's this is all, you know, yeah, bullshit. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But caveat. Yes, that's
yes,
what we
yes,
do.
Yes, yeah, but yeah. It's like, okay, what's considered, like, the truth is your highest potential earning years that get you, like, happen to coincide with women they are most fertile, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's, I'm over here like, okay, I have to move these pieces and do all this and exactly perfectly so that by this time I can step away from my business, have a kid, but then also come back and still be super successful.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then I take things personally. And I'm like, okay, I'm clearly not good enough. Maybe I'm not good enough to do this. Or maybe I'm not, like, and so it's, there's all of that goes into it.
Yeah, honestly, my personal opinion is, like, you have to determine what success looks like to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me, success is money. Like, how much money I have in my bank account. I don't care about draft titles. Daddy Inc., he has one of my favorite bars ever. He says, let's go bank account versus bank account, see who really
yeah,
wins.
100%.
Right? So, like, success can look differently to you, Emma.
Well, and that's, like, so Holland and I, this is the area that we're different in. Like, I care more about, like, the people that I work with, like, than the money I'm making necessarily. And, like, I tell everybody this. Like, I'm retiring at 45 to academia. My ultimate goal in life is to be a comparative religious studies professor.
Oh, what? Say that again?
Comparative religious studies professor.
Okay.
So just like, here's all the religions in the world. Here's all the rituals in the world. Let's put them side by side and see what happens, right? Like, that's very fun for me. I've written and published papers on it. This is an area of my life that no one really knows about. And I'm just like, until you do, and then you're like, no, I totally get it. I'm like, thank you. But like, up until then, it's like 35 to 45, we're going to make a fuck ton of money. That's the only goal. Like, let's just make as much as possible. So like, I have no, like, I don't know, particular loyalty to a career path, a job, a title, or whatever. In fact, you'll die for this. We had somebody reach out to me on LinkedIn offer me career coaching advice because they looked at my LinkedIn and they were like, this person has no idea what they're doing. They're just wandering. And I'm like, what you're not seeing is behind the scenes, the strategy that I call learn and burn, which is like, I want to know how to do that. Because
Jose does it.
I watch it all. I love that. Right? Like, I want to know how to do that one thing so that I can come use it in my personal life, right? So, like, I want to know how to be in marketing. I want to know how to do content creation. I want to know what it takes to run a magazine. I want to know, you know, like, how, like.
Well, it helps your kind of wide ranging interests.
Yes, it keeps my boredom at bay, yeah, frankly.
Yeah.
All of that is very useful to be able to. It's all about knowing what you want. I love that mm-hmm. thread that you're pulling.
Yeah, which is just like, what I want is over there, but can I build something in the meantime that like is self-sufficient? Like, this is where I get to be more of an entrepreneur than a corporate girly, which is just like, can I build something for myself that is residual, that is making me money, that is like helping other people make their own thing? So like the stuff I'm into on the side in Houston is very like, okay, these filmmakers, can we get them freelance corporate video jobs so they can fund their next indie film? Can we like make that community better? Can we like, there's right now, the way that the film industry is run in Houston is the first Thursday of every month, there's an event and they shout out announcements.
Like yelling in a bar.
I'm like, we haven't figured out how to get a microphone.
Or an email newsletter.
Yeah, exactly. So like literally next one I'm going to, I'm like, I know how to write an email and I know how to send email and I know how to like do, like, so I'm just going to do this and then we're going to see if we can't, you know, sell ads in it and make some money.
It's kind of crazy. for years, it's been like kind of like different jobs you've taken. For me, was I decided to open a lot of random companies.
There you go. Yeah. Okay.
I went from like music to construction to an accounting firm to landscaping.
Heard about a barbershop?
Yeah, I heard about the barbershop.
And every step of the way, it was like, I want to learn how to do that, or yes. I don't want to pay somebody to do that. I'm going to figure it out myself.
YouTube is the best university.
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. So speaking about learning, okay, because I want to wrap this up because we definitely want to dive into a few other topics with you guys.
Sure.
But we often ask people the best advice that they've ever gotten. And we asked a guest that recently. Mm. I think a better question for you two is, what is the worst advice you've ever gotten?
We did have this conversation. You first. I can see it. I don't remember what my worst was. Oh, yes, I do.
Okay, great.
Carry on. Yep. Okay, that was great.
Worst advice I've ever gotten is, do what you love.
How's that the worst advice you've ever gotten?
That's a good question. That's a good follow-up.
Because what you love doesn't pay the bills necessarily.
You should have a job you like and that pays the bills. You like enough to go to.
You go to it every day.
Yeah.
And it's not, I think the danger with doing something you love, that's your passion, is A, you'd probably be doing it anyway. So why put the pressure of your lifestyle on it?
Yeah.
And there was definitely a B to that. But
no, I think to your point, not what everyone loves is what makes money. We've talked about that in the podcast. Sure. I love backpacking and I love travel. And yet I know there is a way, theoretically, that I could make a career. I could be a blogger. I could do, you know, a show. And you know what? I would probably lose my love of backpacking along the
way. That's, I think, the danger, too.
100%.
So a job you like is good advice.
The
job you love
is
on the side.
I do not ask people who I think are going to give bad advice for advice. So I haven't been given much bad advice in my life. I'm like, I don't think that, no, that's not going to work out for me. But I will tell you, the thing that is kind of like pervasive advice that exists in the world right now that I think we just need to quash is that you need a degree in order to be successful.
I've been saying that for years.
Thank you.
I think there's a lot of similarity.
Yeah.
Synchronicity.
I'm loving this. He also wears all black, so I feel like I can swap you two out at any moment. I'll tell you a secret.
We got the neutrals memo.
Perfect. I'll tell you a secret. I have not graduated from college. So we're doing this all on...
I got two associates. Both of them went through the Army. So.
Great. I don't even have that. Like, you know, I went to school and I was like, I went to PR. Then I was like, PR is so easy for me. I do not need to pay somebody to teach me how to do this. So I did like Asian studies for a while. And then like I kind of petered off. I was managing a group of DJs at the time. There's pictures of me in like a neon green wig that are very fun if you dig on the internet far enough. Challenge accepted. And then I just like kind of wandered around for a while, like doing this like learn and burn, and like learned so much about how business works from like working as a cashier, right? And then like got stepped up into like kind of the corporate side of that company and like got to see a whole different like case study for business. And like I talked to my friends who were like in MBA school for consulting or for business management or for whatever, and like, well, how are you doing that? And I was like, because I just picked it up and did it. Like, I'm not in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, as a result, I don't have any school debt. And I am getting paid more than most people I know that have degrees in what I'm doing. And they're coming to me looking for jobs and have been their entire career.
You want to know a secret?
Yeah.
Okay, so the reason I hate college particularly is...
Whoa. I'm excited. That's wrong. That took a turn.
No, it was...
I have some episodes.
Not only is it
31 through 35.
I was...
30.
Thank you. That one.
It's 26 through 30.
I was like 19 and I went into Ivy Tech University, like a community college in community college.
Is that me?
I don't know.
I swear I turned it off.
Yeah. Sorry. But in the classroom, I went for business administration and I finished reading the book from Gary Vee, Crushing It. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go get my business degree. I go into the class and it was intro to business. And then the professor said, you're going to make $120,000 and the best job you're ever gonna get with this degree is to manage a hospital. And I was like, I want to make $1 million. He's like, that's never gonna happen for you. And I dropped out of college and I joined the Army a couple days later.
Honestly, I'm pleased that professor was honest with you. like straight up, like there's so many people who are stuck with $200,000 in school debt that they're never gonna get out from underneath because they're only making $120,000 and that's the top of their job. Like, that's the top of the vertical, and I can't support it any longer. Like, it drives me crazy. So we actually offer free advice and free coaching to high schoolers to pick a major, to pick a major that you like enough that's going to make some money.
Right.
Even like, and then on top of that, like if you decide not to go to school, here's vocational schools, here's skills to learn. Like the number one thing my dad always told me, he's like, if you know how to answer the phone, if you know how to run a till, you're always employable. I was like, great. On that alone, I have built this entire career.
I mean, you can make a lot of money from a $59 course on QuickBooks.
Yeah, totally.
And then you can make over 100K as a bookkeeper.
Totally. People are paying us right now to produce their podcast. I'm like, you guys, we learned this from YouTube. like, so when I walk in, I'm like, oh, they're using the same mics. Whew, good job. Right? Like, it's like it's hard. Yeah.
I learned how to run run digital ads on YouTube, mm-hmm. like Facebook ads on YouTube. Yes. Like 5 years ago, I was like, I want to start doing this. And then, you know, from there, it kind of grew. Mm-hmm. But that's, you guys have such, I agree with what Jose said. You have such a good perspective mm-hmm. on, you know, while it's corporate America, it is just so applicable, even if you're working within a smaller business. It's know what you want, right? Know who you can, who are your champions, who are your mentors, and then how to get, essentially, be really strategic is mm-hmm. what you guys are, like, as a whole, just be strategic about your life, your plans, your career goals, and what's important to you.
The only one that's advocating for yourself is you.
Yeah.
So if you're not doing it,
mic drop. Okay, on that note, seriously, on that note, if you guys like this kind of content, the transparency, the honesty, the real guests that we have, please like and subscribe and follow along for more stuff. And by the way, this is just part one. We are going to be having a part two. So follow along for more. Thanks.
Bye.